All right, welcome everybody to this next episode of the Renegade HPG podcast. I'm very delighted to be joined by Marco Mazzoni, and we are going to be talking about BattleTech and BattleTech art. Marco is the lead senior concept artist at Harebrained Schemes and a very frequent contributor to Catalyst Game Labs, and has done a ton of work visualizing this wonderful universe for us. We're going to be diving into that universe today, kind of sharing our mutual love and talking about kind of how Marco has been able to contribute to that for us. So Marco, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. So, so talk to me a little about kind of your role at Harebrained Schemes and exactly kind of what that's like. And, you know, I get the sense that there's multiple divisions of the company and BattleTech is one of them. And so I'm curious just kind of how you fit in and how you joined and kind of how you contribute to that universe.
Sure. Yeah. So I was hired on as a concept artist at BattleTech. It actually started before that. I was doing some freelance work for them. I started by basically designing some of the vehicles and turrets and paint schemes that you'll see in the game. And I guess they like that enough that they're like, hey, why don't you come join us? So I jumped at that chance. I pretty much just, I think I started at the Flashpoint expansion. So yeah, my first task in-house was working on the Hatchet Man, which I was very proud of. I was happy with that process.
I saw on the, I think on the forums there for Paradox, there was like a big, blog and, you know, kind of process step by step on your process of that. That was fun to kind of go through and read.
Yeah, it's fun. Just cause I save so many, versions of everything that I'm working on. So it's nice to be able to kind of like, just kind of dump all that at the end and just sort of like have my little diary. It was such a great company to work at. And I just felt like we just clicked early on. And, towards the end of Mike McCain's time there, he basically sort of passed the torch on to me for art direction. So I took over for the Urban Warfare and Heavy Metal expansions. I was handed a great team, and I was able to kind of help guide them to some cool products on that one.
When you're going through a mech like the Hatchet Man, like what are your considerations and the redesign and kind of what are you thinking and kind of what are your freedoms, you know, and kind of, you know, for that project in particular, you know, what kind of led you to the final project, the final version?
Yeah. So that was a fun one to jump in on because I already had a pretty established style. Everything I've done in BattleTech so far, you know, I'm sort of like following someone else, you know, I'm following Alex on that stuff. And then, you know, for Catalyst, I'm following Anthony. Totally fine with that. Those guys have done a bang up job. So you know, I'm standing on the shoulders giants there. So a lot of it was just sort of trying to adhere to his more, the more sort of chunky military style that he seems to use in his mechs. And we pulled up a lot of references for mechs of similar tonnage, just to try to feel like we're getting the right weight and scale for it. But of course the biggest challenge was the hatchet itself, They didn't want to have him actually looking like he's gripping a hatchet. They thought it was sort of corny. So we're like, okay, let's try some versions with that and without. That was the biggest iterative process right there, I think. I think the coolest breakthrough is when they wanted to do something that's more transformative. So it would look like it was sort of just like the idol would be more hidden, and then it would just sort of flip out like a switchblade. Yeah. So actually being able to come up with some animation steps to that and work with the animator on that was, it was pretty cool. And then seeing it come to life, and especially in his idle pose, and he just sort of like flips it out when he's sort of like, cool. I was like, oh, I love that.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Someone told me it's a screenshot in actual art, but there's one of the Hatchet Man standing in the dark, in the rain in front of what I believe is a panther. I don't know if you know the piece I'm talking about, but it's kind of like has a greenish hue, greenish yellow hue. It's a really cool piece.
Is it the splash art from Flashpoint?
It might be.
Standing over a locust. I did that for him. Yeah.
Yeah. There's one with the locust where the locust kind of is cleaved in half through it.
Yeah.
There's another one I'm talking about. Actually, I'll pull it up real quick. You know, I'll show you guys. You can tell me. There it is. Can you see that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this one.
That was actually a screen capture from our tech artist, Lee Scheinbaum.
That's awesome. It's amazing how like sometimes screen captures can just like, they just really nail it. You know, certainly you see the guys that spend way too much time playing like Halo or something. You see screen grabs and it's fun. But this is a favorite of mine, just because I love, and I talked about this a lot with Anthony too. You know, I'm really kind of drawn to scenes that are very deviate from just the mech on a battlefield shooting. And so this is anything with like a good atmosphere is cool. So it's even more impressive knowing that this is just a screen cap from the game. But I wish I had more experience actually playing the game. I downloaded it months ago to kind of, you know, give it a shot and try it. All my computer is this laptop that I'm recording on, and it turns into a furnace very quickly.
That's unfortunately very common.
Actually, my lap was almost getting like second degree burns, you know, when I realized I needed it. It wasn't just a warm blanket that I was under, it was the laptop.
It actually toasted my old 970 card when I first started playing the game. So it had some performance issues, especially early on.
Well, I have the software acquired, so now as soon as I get, you know, a platform to play it on, I'll be able to kind of dive in. But in the meantime, I can enjoy the art coming out of it for sure.
Well, I'll definitely plug those expansions. Urban Warfare, especially, is pretty cool, I thought.
Yeah, I got one of the good deals where you kind of got the full pack for a pretty good price. I think it was like $25-$30 for all of them. It was good, but. Awesome. And then you've been doing a ton of work for Catalyst. The stuff, you know, Catalyst doesn't always credit the artist, or they never do. Sometimes when they just blast the art, but it looked like that Banshee 3S was yours. Did I read the style correctly?
Yeah. That's the most recent one. Yeah. I was very happy to see that one sort of out in the wild. That was probably one of my favorite pieces so far.
It was beautiful. Yeah. And there's not too many great Banshee ones. Like Florian has a Banshee one from early in his career, but I think you take the cake now for the kind of peak performance on the Banshee art. So it was good. And it's funny, cause I've been doing a lot of work kind of building custom cards for the old Battletech CCG and kind of plugging in where I can find it. So I've done a ton of looking for art out there. And it's funny, like the mechs that just don't have art, you know, things that you like the Vindicator, there's like no Vindicator art. And I was actually talking to
a common mech in the universe too.
I know, right? Yeah. I was talking to Bruins about maybe commissioning a Vindicator for one of coming up, but every time I see a new art, you know, and when your Battle 2 Gid come out, I was like, oh, Black Knight, all right, let's make a card. It's been a front process, it's very cool. And you know, so you know, kind of having gone through all those, you know, what you know, where in the process, or how does a Catalyst kind of communicate with you in terms of what they want? You know, how much freedom do you have? Are they giving you like specs of what the piece should be? You know, or are they just saying, you know, give me a Banshee, you know, and go with it? You know, sure. What does that process look like?
So it definitely varies from project to project. Some of them are a lot more prescriptive. I've actually found some of the novel covers to be a little bit more, because I mean, it's based on text. So it's like, it's this mech fighting this mech doing this thing. You know, in this kind of setting, my freedom is more in just like composition and, you know, attacks, you know, like what kind of, it's mostly just the composition. So I don't really have freedom for like what mechs I'm using. In this case, I actually had a lot of freedom on the Banshee one. It was, Brent came to me with some different mercenary houses, and I wanted to pick one that I hadn't seen represented a lot recently in art. So, and I haven't really done a lot with the more sort of standard, like olive drab green. And for some reason, like that color combo just really kind of, it was a challenge. So I wanted to try it. So I was like, Air Donny Light Horse, let's try it. Yeah. I feel like, you know, the Kel Horses, Kel Hounds, just re-edit that up. Kel Hounds and, you know, some of the other mercenaries, like Wolstergans are just like, you know,
the Highlanders. Yeah.
They've got those really nice paint schemes that really just pop on screen. I just wanted something that would be, you know, a little harder to work with, but I could kind of have free range with. As far as what mechs to use, I just kind of gave them a list of mechs that I wanted to use and sort of like cross-checked it, like, hey, does this sort of fit with this this unit, or especially the time frame that we're working with? And I got a bunch of sort of like yeses, nos, and, you know, thankfully the Banshee was on there because I really kind of wanted to work with that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it worked out.
Very cool. Yeah, I had a, you were talking about cover arts too. When I chatted with Mike Stackpole, we were talking about that, and even Blaine too, a little bit, talking about cover art and kind of how involved or if they're involved in the kind of cover art. And Mike was telling how it's really the publisher to kind of, go and dive in. And so, for you, having kind of redone so many of kind of the recent ones, what has been that been like in kind of taking those classic covers and giving them kind of like a modern spin?
Well, that's been really fun. I did the Warrior trilogy was probably the one that I spent about, that I had the most fun with. That was probably one of the first set of books that I read as a teenager from the universe. So
yep.
For me, I was just trying to pull scenes that I really loved more than reference the old art, because I have the like old graphic novel, or the old art where it's just like two people standing with like a blue background and like their perspective and anatomy is just like, close enough. So yeah, I was able to just kind of run free with just like the cool scenes that I wanted. So yeah, in that case, I just sort of pitched that and Brent was like, yep, it checks out. Let's do it.
Cool.
But yeah, I haven't really done a lot of direct remakes of old pieces, except I would say like the Battle of Tewkesbury piece. Yeah, I definitely referenced the old Doug Chapman piece a lot. Our sort of idea was we wanted to do almost like a shift perspective on his old piece, so it almost feel like the same battle scene, but just like the camera would be somewhere else.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that was kind of a fun challenge, because I still had some free room to, since the mechs have been redesigned, there's clearly a different look. So I could like repaint them a little bit. I can kind of like freshen them up a bit. But, we want to keep the same sort of color palette and same sort of theme. And I kind of did something similar with this Banshee piece, where I pulled some of the old Chaffee classics for the Mercenary Handbooks. If you look at the background in his, it's almost exactly the same as my. I did my own, but I really wanted to reference that palette. And I wanted to kind of capture that. The perspective of having a human and then the mech, and just like that similar sort of scale where you're really kind of pushing it to see how big these things are.
Yeah,
and just sort of telling the story of that. It's just a different story.
And the Banshee's maybe second tallest. Is the Annihilator the tallest and Banshee is second tallest?
That's right.
Is that, oh man, I can't believe I remember that. But
I remember that too, because you think he's bigger, but it's just squat.
yeah definitely. Yeah, anytime anytime there's more going on than just the mech shooting, I'm a happy guy. Get the infantry in there, kind of get that perspective. It's cool. Actually, with the, I've been doing this project, Gallery 3025, where I'm trying to kind of, basically bring the community together to find new artists and new perspectives to kind of dive in. And I think the first project we did was the Mech Warrior Bulldogs, that the animation that Bruins did. Bruins is an amazing creator, great storyteller, and combined with that, the kind of, and the fact that he did the score as well as the animation, it blows me away. There's so many. Yeah, he did. But yeah, our next project is, I'm going to try to find a concept artist, to just kind of, and toss him like a short story or maybe a chapter and, one of the books, and just have him kind of spit out maybe, 10, 12, concept art sketches. It depends on what our budget is and how much it kind of, a quick concept art is, but yeah, so it'll be something to kind of explore it. And I think the focus will be on elemental and the mix of battle. So, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes of that next project there. But
elementals, just because they sort of fit that the scale just above people, like right between humans and mechs. So it's like it really kind of it's cool. I like that area.
Definitely. And talking to some of the other artists, they've made comments kind of about your process in terms of building an entire kind of 3D environment and then taking snapshots in it. Talk to us a little bit about that and kind of how you kind of produce your pieces and kind of
Sure, yeah, that's sort of evolved over time. Like I still every time I sit down to do a piece, I feel like I don't know what I'm doing.
Okay.
And that's how I keep it interesting, right? Like for my day job, it's definitely a lot more strict and regimented, but for something like this, it's like, let's explore it a little bit. So yeah, early on I was doing a lot of stuff with VR. I found that to be very just freeing to work with, as far as like being able to manipulate the 3D models that were being kicked over from Catalyst. And yeah, just being able to really kind of compose everything and make sure the scale's right and that it feels right in person. But recently I've been sort of feeling the limitations of that as far as once I move that over to 2D, I feel like there's definitely like I'm losing something in perspective, something in the weight is just not quite, I'm not, you know, what I'm saying here doesn't pop up in that 2D image the way
right.
I want it. Recently I've been doing a lot more with Blender as far as just getting in there and, you know, what's being kicked out is exactly what I'm seeing. So that was the Banshee piece and the Tsukiya piece where I feel like those are more successful. Yeah, so like process is pretty, I've been spending more time in 3D. I'm not typically a 3D artist, but you know, I'm sort of learning and kind of using this challenge to kind of explore that a little bit more. So what I try to do in there is first just, you know, lay down just real base ground geometry and just try to get something, just get a sense of like where things are going to stack up on top of each other. And then when I get the mechs in there, I will start actually sort of manipulating their scale almost like a diorama or something where it's like if something's far away, I can put it way far away, but then scene is unwieldy. So I end up, it's easier to sort of like shrink it and like play with it that way. So there's a lot of most of my time is actually spent with just composition and lighting and just really trying to dial that in and get that as good as I can. That's all stuff that I like to do in 2D as well, but the accuracy is definitely better if I spend more time in 3D, I've noticed. So yeah, from there, it's just once I get a solid base, I kick it over to 2D, and then the fun part is just painting all the surfaces and making sure I can kind of get that weight and sense of scale on the details of things. I love painting battle damage and, you know, fire effects and stuff like that. So
yeah,
whenever I get a chance to kind of pour into that, I sort of run with it.
Awesome. And I'm curious, you know, for artists these days, it just seems like there's so many technological developments, you know, in terms of how you're actually producing your art. And it's fascinating to me to kind of talk to people, you know, that work almost exclusively on the screen, you know, and kind of that analog component, you know, is kind of like just kind of disappearing. What's your own background, you know, in your kind of art development and education? You know, did you start kind of in that kind of pen and paper, pencil and paper, and then evolve to the screen, or did you know, what has that process been like for you?
Yeah, so I mean, I definitely started off more traditionally, I guess. Growing up, it was just, you know, I grew up with these TROs, and I would copy that art, so it was all just line work, and
yeah.
That was a huge inspiration for me. So that and my comic books. So yeah, it was a lot of pen and paper stuff. When I started trying to take it seriously, then I started taking more traditional like classical painting stuff. So first classes in college, I was doing portrait painting, life drawing. You know, I thought that was what I was gonna do. I thought that was where it was at. But my teacher at the time, who was, you know, old school, classically trained, he was just like, you gotta get out of this. Your stuff, you would do a lot better with computer stuff, just because it's like, you know, you're okay with this, but like there's a lot more room for growth with this. Like that's the future. So yeah. He really kind of pushed me with that. So I started exploring that a little bit more, and it was rough. It's a rough transition, but it was definitely worthwhile, I think, because I still have the, I guess the traditional chops to just make sure my compositions aren't shit every time, but
right.
It's just been a just learning every time something new comes out. It's just a new tool. Right now I'm actually doing a lot of stuff on my iPad, and I didn't think that's the direction I was going to be going, but
yeah,
here we are.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you know, interesting your comment just about kind of having come from that kind of more traditional and kind of evolving that into kind of the digital, the modern world is interesting. Have you been able to dive in, you know, with your kind of modern skills and talents and kind of go back to that pen and paper with any BattleTech stuff, or are you kind of working exclusively on the screen? Like, is it like a safety blanket for you, or you like to kind of take a break every once in a while and kind of go back?
For professional work, it's all digital. Like, yeah, I definitely do a lot of sketch work for myself, but yeah, man, that undo button is addicting. Like, just like, oh, I fucked that up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and when you're on a deadline, it's like, it's definitely a lot harder to get that part up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I still do it. Like, it's one of those things where I've noticed if I go too long without drawing my sketchbook, my digital work suffers. So there's definitely, there's a pretty direct correlation there, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, it seems like, it just seems like you are, sometimes being locked in is kind of what you're doing and kind of being forced. It's kind of like being out of that comfort zone of, the undo button, kind of forces you into a little different level of creativity. I feel like I need to, start doing some writing off the computer and just kind of sit down with a pen and kind of write, because it's so, for me, if I'm doing something on the computer and I'm writing something down, it's just, I'm trying to make everything perfect and it's not flowing, so a paragraph will take, 10 minutes to write a paragraph instead of just sitting down and writing it and sticking with what you're
writing. Filing off the edges before you can even get the bigger picture out, right?
Yeah, the fact that, if I get like a birthday card or something or a Christmas card and I got to write in it, that's like uncomfortable, that I'm like, oh my gosh, what if I, write something wrong or something silly? I think that's unfortunate. I think that, it's a skill that I wish we did better at kind of maintaining, because I think it's important. So it's cool to see, hear that you recognize the need to kind of go back to the basics from time to time.
It's funny you mentioned the Christmas cards, because that's one of those things where I've been doing that more recently for friends and family, where I'm making them Christmas cards, by hand. And the first couple times I sat down to do it, I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
I had to throw out a bunch of cards and I'm like, do I know how to do art anymore? But it's good. Yeah, it's good to just work through that and just make a pile of trash that you're like, okay, those are throwaway. That's fine. That's okay.
Yeah. So, one thing, in terms of going from, kind of the amateur where you kind of do your own thing to professional, are there any areas that you've been wanting to kind of explore but haven't been able to, just because, you're so kind of engulfed in what pays the bills, any kind of dream pieces that you'd love to kind of get time and dive into, or scenes that you'd like to explore?
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking specifically like BattleTech stuff or just like in general,
I'd say in general. Yeah. In general.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, in general, I definitely, so I try to do like a pretty good balance of, like work, home life stuff. So like, even though my work is still art and my home life is still art, I try to make sure they're different kinds of art. When I'm doing a lot of work for Catalyst and doing a lot of BattleTech stuff, then for my personal work, I try to make sure it's a lot of more organic stuff. I'm almost 40, but I still love drawing just monsters and robots. So it's like, I'm not drawing robots, I want to draw monsters. So yeah, the more technical I go with one area, the more sort of loose and just organic I want to go with the other. So yeah, right now I'm just exploring a lot of just I'm picking up like ZBrush and some sculpting programs on the iPad. And I'm literally sculpting monsters and creatures from like Guyver. I'm redesigning all that stuff right now. And I'm just like, that's fun for me. But yeah, when I was knee deep in doing some my old gig, I was working at CCP Games. It's World of Darkness, is all like vampires and creatures. So when I came home, it was like, I just gotta draw robots and sci-fi. it's always gotta be the opposite of what I'm doing for my day job.
Awesome. Yeah, and people can hop on to ArtStation, I believe, Mark Armazzoni, and I was able to check that out before we connected, and tons of good stuff in there. And it's, I feel like it's good to have that balance too, because things get too mechanical, and kind of a lot of the kind of BattleTech art. I'm like, I miss those classic, like the Black Widow, Tales of Black Widow cover type of thing, just kind of, that perfect combination of kind of organic and robot. Those are things I would love to kind of see more kind of in the modern stuff,
You're talking about the mini, or even the story that came out of that's great, but the mini that I saw come out of that is just beautiful.
Yeah, and the talking about like Holloway's artwork from the cover of the original source book back in the day.
There's like a Halloween story about it wasn't Black Widow. It was it was something about a marauder. There was like a haunted marauder, and I can't.
Oh, I have seen that art. Yeah, that is a very cool art piece. Yeah,
somebody made a mini that was like, it was like a monster inside of the marauder that tore itself out. Gorgeous! I love that stuff.
Yeah, I remember that popping up on Facebook. I had no idea who did it or where it is, but yeah, that when that came up, I was like, oh, that's awesome. You know, a little bit of crossover action there. You know, very fun. Well, what's the direction? Kind of where are you guys going with hair? I mean, obviously you have, you know, NDAs, but kind of what are you guys kind of working on next? Because I know I think they had said that they're not developing BattleTech anymore. That's, mainly just getting moderated by the community. So kind of where's your role there now kind of moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, NDA, so I can't talk too much about it. But it's not BattleTech currently, I can say that. But I think we left it in a pretty good state that we gave the modders enough sort of tools that, you know, they can keep improving on it. And it looks like they have. And
yeah,
I'm very happy with sort of the sort of send off that we gave it. I mean, I would have liked to spend more time with it, of course, but it is what it is.
Yeah. So what's kind of been your kind of most fun piece? You know, what's the one that you kind of most proud of that you've kind of put out, you know, recently?
Well, I would say that Banshee piece, but more because it's part of a much larger piece. So it's actually like...
Ooh, so we haven't seen the rest of it yet?
Yeah, no, not
excellent,
yet.
Excellent. All right.
there's going to be, I don't know how they're planning on revealing it, so I don't want to spoil that yet, but there's going to be a lot more to that one. So
very cool.
If you've got a double or triple monitor set up, you might be able to utilize this one to the max.
Definitely.
So I'm pretty excited about that one. If we're talking earlier stuff, I had a lot of fun doing, I did a Wolves on the Border cover. It was like one of the first things I did for Catalyst. And it was just a dragon, just stomping through the ice and kind of blasting. And I felt like it told a pretty good story for what it was. It had some atmosphere and I had pretty free rein on it. There's no design for the dragon yet. And they didn't really care too much. They're just like, all right, kind of get it close to somewhere between Alex's and Anthony style. I was like, cool.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the first custom cards I made was pulling that dragon. That's great. Oh, cool. That's a great piece right there. One of my favorites, I think, is the Red Baron's Marauder. I love that piece. Oh, yeah. Stomping through the snow. It's such good color and contrast on that one.
That one is interesting. I had very mixed reactions having to redo that one with the Griffin, and it sort of muddied the waters for me now. Like when I look at one, it feels like the Marauder just feels like a previous version of the Griffin one now, and it's just like, so in my head I'm just like, all right, let's put them both aside. I'm tired of looking at them. But yeah, you're right. I definitely like that striking contrast to that one. I think it does kind of fall in line with what you talked about. It just like the a mech standing there shooting. I've had a lot of covers that are just like, hey, yeah, this is just a mech doing that thing. And it's like, I get it. You know, that's what you want to have for a cover sometimes to sell it, but yeah, I definitely get more excited when there's more to it. You know? So when that Banshee scene, they said, all right, let's get some vehicles in there and some infantry. I was just like, yeah, I want that. I want to sell that scale. I want to tell a story if I can.
Yeah. And I'm surprised, it does seem like they have kind of and I talked with this with Anthony, that the kind of the direction that you get tends to kind of have that just kind of static mech shooken feel to it, that there's not a ton of deviation. I'm curious, kind of, I'd like to be a fly on the wall of kind of the marketing people's talks where they're deciding exactly what they want for those covers, because, there's some great classic covers. Probably one of my favorites, if not my single favorite, was Boris Vallejo's Day of Heroes cover, where they have the Hatchet Man standing over, the three characters. It's just, I mean, Boris is not a mech guy, right? It's kind of like, it's basically like a 10-man Hatchet Man, but it's just awesome. Like there's atmosphere and there's something very, intimidating for voting about those guys standing there. And so I'm curious, from the people there and like when they're asking for those specs. And I mean, I'm old enough, I'm 40, so I'm a little bit ahead of you in the life race, but there are a lot of people that have jobs that are not very good at them, so you wonder how many people are just like, oh, it's a book about robots, just draw a robot. And there's not, you don't get the artists that making those decisions, but yeah, I'd wish that people that are up there could, certainly someone like yourself that has that balance of kind of organic and metallic, you know, in their portfolio of just saying, hey man, let's, you know, throw me a scene. You know, this is a book about people, not about robots. Yeah. And so make a scene about people, and it's in an environment that has robots, and you know, what do you come up with? I think that'd be cool. But that's part of what I'm trying to do with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely feel like we're starting to move more towards that. I think early on in the sort of this reboot phase, a lot of it was, look, we're redesigning these mechs and it's all about these mechs. Like, we need to kind of showcase these fresh new designs. And that was the big exciting sell. So in my mind, it makes sense that, you know, it's a lot of the earlier covers out of this were just like, check out this cool fucking mech doing whatever, just standing here being featured. Yeah, it's about featuring the design, which I totally understand. I don't think that's a valid approach. It's just, I definitely can't wait to see more. Now that we're kind of moving past that and we're starting to get more vehicles in, you know, we've got the TRO with the vehicles out. And so we're getting some of those 3D models in and we're starting to see those designs pop up a little bit more. So, yeah.
Awesome. And Yeah, and what's it like, kind of, what is the relationship between kind of the big companies, I guess, Piranha and Harebrained Schemes and Catalyst in terms of developing BattleTech? You know, is there, you know, certainly for you having kind of worked with both, you know, what is that dynamic like? Is it two very distinct companies doing their thing in the same IP, or is there a lot of kind of working together saying, hey, this is what we're doing and kind of collaborating there? You know, how does that work?
Yeah, so from my perspective, it definitely feels like they're all very aware of each other, and they definitely want to make sure they're doing their own thing with what they have. At Harebrain, we definitely did a lot of, we leaned on the Piranha models essentially, but we wanted to make sure that we kind of ended it there. You know, we wanted to make sure everything else was sort of ours. We're telling our own story. We're not, even when it came down to like texture work, you know, I spent a lot of time, you know, concepting new textures for these mechs because we wanted to make sure we had a different look and feel as these guys are smaller on screen. And I don't know how, if we're totally successful on that, but you know, I feel like we sort of carved out our own little space using that. We didn't really interact too much with Catalyst in that regard. I think beyond the Arano source book, there wasn't a whole lot of back and forth. Like, we gave them some graphic design, so they've been using the our BattleTech logo that we developed. That's sort of, they took that on. But yeah, not a whole lot of direct communication as far as like making sure the lore is tied in or anything. I mean, we really just want to make sure we're kind of, they're all carving out their own sort of spaces, but just kind of keeping an eye on each other. There's some communication there, but not a lot.
Yeah. It's interesting to me, you know, and I forgot what conversation it was maybe actually one that I haven't published yet, but we were talking about kind of Wiseman and kind of having that property and then kind of, you know, selling the property and then coming back into the property and the weirdness of, you know, someone like, you know, Jordan having to come back and be like, well, can I work in my property again? You know, but awesome, you know, to also see the awesome product that comes when that kind of creative force comes back into BattleTech. But yeah, and I remember playing the original Mech Warrior way back in the day, where there was actually that kind of grand, you know, it was an adventure. There was a role playing aspect to it. And so it's cool to kind of see that coming back. You know, it came back through HBS, and that's why I kind of picked up that over kind of the MechWarrior Online for, you know, what I want to kind of dive into. Cause I say this all the time on podcasts, but video games are a very dangerous precipice for me to dive into when I don't have abundance of time, which is basically going to be never since I'm, you know, not in my 20s anymore. But no, it's cool. It's, I definitely, you know, people always say, you know, BattleTech got like a Mass Effect type treatment. That would be incredible. You know, to see that. Grand epic. Yeah. I can't wait till the new Mass Effect comes out. I think it's next month, isn't it? That's maybe.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one. First two games, especially, were just like, oh, I love those so much. Yeah. I still like the third one. I wasn't a complete hater on that one, but it definitely sort of closed the loop in a way that was a little harsher than I would have liked, I think.
Yeah. The first 90% I was enjoyed. There were moments in the third one I was like, oh man, when the Thresher Maw took out the Reaper, I was like, oh my gosh, did that just happen? You know, that was amazing. Yeah, so it'll be fun to kind of play through and see what they've done to kind of streamline that game. But very cool. So, talk to me a little bit about kind of, your own kind of plan in biotech. Like, how do you kind of stay involved with the IP outside of work and in your playtime? Are you a video gamer? Are you a novel reader? Are you a tabletop guy? It's always amazed me all the different vectors that people come into the IP from.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely, I've dabbled in a little everything, right? So when I started off, I was, I was basically sneaking into my brother's room and looking at his, because he'd paint them and he was fantastic at it. So I'd see the mechs and I'd steal his TROs and just so it all started with the art for me and just seeing the mechs. I didn't give a shit about the game or, the story. Eventually I moved on. I wanted to learn more about it. So I started picking up the novels. And so I started really kind of getting into that aspect of it, but still never really got too into the game until maybe late teens, and I was able to kind of get a few friends playing, but it was real touch and go there. It's just there's so many memes about all the charts and graphs that, a lot of people sort of check out that stuff, and I was with them. Honestly, I probably only played maybe a dozen or so games overall and had some fun with them, but it's you have to really make a commitment of time, and it was beyond what I was able to do at the time. So I actually set it aside for a little bit as I hit my 20s, and I just I was trying to just explore other things, and I wanted to get into maybe film or whatever, and it's just all right, yeah, that was my teenage years, whatever. But then I think MechWarrior Online is when I started getting back into it. I started seeing Alex's designs, and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this, holy shit.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was probably 2013 is when that picked back up, and I got pretty heavily into that. I was playing semi-competitively for a while, and I was super into that game for many years.
Awesome.
And that's basically what got me wanting to sort of pursue, Catalyst and sort of kind of working with them. And I started seeing Anthony's designs that he's putting out with that. And so Catalyst was my first sort of in professionally with them. Did a few pieces for that, and that's what kind of got me in through Harebrained Schemes, because they saw some of the stuff I was doing with that, and now it's just kind of intertwined, and I just kind of dabble in little everything except for the tabletop game itself, which I still can't play because I don't have friends to play with.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm sure I could count on my fingers how many times I've played the tabletop. Mm-hmm. And yet I have, more minis than I need behind me. But for me, it was the novels, as a teen, reading through the novels and developing the lore. Yeah.
What's your favorite novel or series of novels?
Oh, Wolves on the Border. It's not a contest. Yeah. Wolves on the Border is literature. The rest are great books, but Wolves on the Border is literature. When I reread it last year, I just kept putting it down. I was like, this is just great writing. It was super cool when I was able to connect with Bob Charette and talk with him and go through and get a little insights and the development of that and the story. And it was, between talking to him and Mike Stackpole, it was, I had this preconceived notion of this wonderful collaboration between the artists and then the guys at FASA and building this world. And it just, and as I kept kind of asking these leading questions to kind of get that story that I had kind of built in my head, I started to realize that there wasn't this grand collaboration, that it was so segmented. And it was just like, all right, here's a little snippet and run with it. And here's a little snippet and run with it. And how well everything fit together when it was done, given how little actual interaction. Cause it was, Mike Stackpole, when I was talking to Mike, he's like, yeah, I've never met Bob Thurston, and I don't know if Bob Charette has met Bob Thurston, and it's like, I mean, it's like you guys developed the clans, what the clans are were between Stackpole and Thurston, and they haven't even met.
These little islands that just happen to work together.
It's crazy. Yeah. And the puzzle pieces fit. It's awesome. But Wolves on the Border, as I was, I could maybe say that was my favorite now. I grew up my entire life up until I started rereading them last year. Mike Stackpole was number one for me, Warrior Trilogy and then Beta Krensky.
Those are very easy to get into early on, I think.
Definitely.
That was the best, big picture BattleTech universe, I think, for me. That was like, oh, fuck, this is huge. Okay, yeah. There's a lot of room to play with this. So, I started developing my own ideas and stories based on that. It's like, oh, this is cool.
So I loved rereading those again. And it was funny. I uh I have a horrible memory with certain things. It's weird the things that I remember and the things that I don't. And so it was a blessing in rereading, because it was like there were moments of deja vu, through the reading, but like I had no clue. I had a rough idea of the scheme, but it was so fresh. And but as an adult, as a 38, 39 year old, whatever I was when I was reading Wolves on the Border, the themes resonate different with, 38 year old Travis than they did with 15 year old Travis. Like, it's an incredible book. And it was one of the best parts of my podcast with Bob was when he was talking about, about the scene. Cut here if you haven't read it, if you skip forward 20 seconds, I'll give you. When the suicide scene and how and what was going on and just how much he thought into the details of why he did this and what the action meant. And it was brilliant. It was a very fun conversation. If anyone is, fan of Wolves on the Border and hasn't caught that podcast, definitely check it out. But it's brilliant, brilliant writing. And I think that's, I know Blaine has gone on record several times saying that that's his favorite, as well. So it's the author that the authors revere, respect. But Wolves on the Border. And then though I've read, some of the new stuff. I've read relatively little of the new stuff just because I'm trying to kind of get back through my read through, and I'm up to Blood of Heroes. And so really early in the process. So I'm what's that, like 12, 15 books into it. And so all the new stuff I haven't read yet, but because Betrayal of Ideals was, out of the timeline, it was early, I was able to pick that up. And I really enjoyed that, and that was the first time I got to read Blaine, because Blaine's stuff picks up, probably about 12 novels ahead of where I am right now.
I read was Highlander's Gambit, and that's definitely awesome. Further out.
Yeah, definitely. And I was chatting with Lauren Coleman a couple months ago for the first time, and I was like, he was talking about podcasts and happy to kind of connect into podcasts, and I was like, Lauren, I'd love to do a podcast, but I feel bad because I haven't actually read your work, so I want to kind of wait until I've actually read your initial contributions to BattleTech before we sit down. Not that there's tons that we couldn't cover in terms of the business side and running Catalyst Games, but so we're getting there. But
you can always do a multi-part thing. It's fine.
I can totally. We're gonna do Blaine's in for one of the roundtables that I'm doing. I did an awesome one with Tex and Bruins and Bishop, and then we did another one with Brent and Bishop and Alex Glacius. We're just basically like geeking out over the BattleTech world and kind of exploring things, with Tex, the historian, came in, and it was basically like a history of, Japan and World War II, in the middle of that one, which that was a great podcast. And then the one with Alex, and Brent and Bishop, we were talking about mechs and kind of geeking out over how autocannons work and how ammo feeds and how different varieties. And so,
I love that they're all just like genuine fans of that stuff too. I finally met Alex for the first time at I guess it was the last MechCon. It would have been 2 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't sure what to expect. If he was just like, oh, I'm just an artist who likes mechs or whatever. But no, he was genuinely just easily jumping into it about weapon variants and specific mechs. And I was like, all right, cool. We can be friends. This is cool.
Definitely. Yeah. Those roundtables have been fun. I'm definitely looking forward to doing more. I have a big one coming up. I'm not going to announce the people, but it is a triple all-star cast together for one of the next ones coming up in May. So we'll keep doing them. Tex loves doing them, and Blaine's down for hopping in one too. We'll keep pushing those out. But yeah, Alex, that was fun. It was fun to talk to, Alex, and just diving into the nitty gritty. It was interesting kind of his work in terms of having to, we talked about kind of the requirements of building the redesign of the mechs, but there's actually a practical limitation for him. And I'm sure that you probably have an idea of this as well, because, this is something, Anthony has dealt with it now because he has to make the minis, but there's something very different between what kind of you and Alex do, because you're building designs that have to work in motion, in a game. Yeah. And so, maybe you can use this and dive into kind of your perspective of kind of that challenge with your design and kind of how it influences you in a way that you wouldn't, give you restraints, if you were just doing it on the screen without that need.
Yeah, I would say the best example of that, because I was very early on with the Hatchet Man when I jumped in. So, you know, I was still very naive as far as like limitations, and there's a lot of like, okay, we'll fix that later kind of thing. I'm like, okay, yeah, cool, you're just making cool. But yeah, with like the Bull Shark, that was definitely a lot more, yeah, because I was directing at the time, so I had to make sure it was all legit and from the ground up. So, I mean, it's kind of, it unintentionally turned into a cop out, but it's like, you know, it's very symmetrical. So there's not a lot of like, you know, this arm's going to be big, but it clips into this or anything like that. I made sure there's a lot of room for the joints. Like you have to make sure everything has full range of motion that it's intended to have in the right spots. And I mean, I've seen some designs that do clip sometimes. And it's like, it's okay. Yeah. Cause you know, it just happens for like a few frames of an animation. It's fine. But I wanted to make sure there was none of that with the Bull Shark, even if it's just me who cares about that. I was like, I want to make sure it's legit. So
yeah.
So yeah, the animation was a big constraint on that. But the one that caught me by surprise was the just the weapon variety and like how you have to account for that in the hard points. And yeah, so like if you're wearing the shirt. So like if you've got like the missile pods up here, you have to make sure that this can account for every single missile variant that's available.
Yeah.
Because you know that they can just put that in there in the game. So it's like, yeah. Okay, I have to make sure that they all fit now. Yeah, and that was the biggest one, I think. The rest was all kind of gravy. It was just kind of making sure, you know, it looked cool from every angle that I possibly could, especially in our game, because you can, it's free camera, so you can, you know, move around. But honestly, at the end of the day, I wanted to make sure if somebody works in 3D print it, it looks cool even in person and on table. So I wanted to make sure that it actually held up scale-wise in that regard too. But yeah, mostly just animation was the biggest one. That was his own set of challenges for all the mechs that we dealt with.
And I've talked a lot in other podcasts in just terms of how mechs move and the interpretation of that, kind of the kind of range between tank and Gundam, you know. Yeah. And so kind of through your work and your art, you know, talk a little bit about kind of what, how do you imagine, you know, what's a, you know, from light, you know, even maybe, you know, both in perspective, having worked with Harebrain, and certainly they have their imagination, but you know, what is, you know, kind of free of that, kind of how do you, you know, what's your thoughts, you know, how dynamic is a mech exactly, and how does that change from, you know, a Locust to an Atlas or a Banshee?
Yeah, that's a good question. I like that. So I tend to, I look a lot of it like when people operate heavy machinery, but they're like the best at operating that machinery. So like sometimes we'll see, you know, like somebody operating a helicopter to put out a fire just right, so they know how to swoop in at just the right angle. It's like you feel like that guy knows, he's like in tune with that machine. So yes, that machine has limitations, but he can almost make it feel graceful the way he moves it. So I do put a lot of thought in like poses, and yeah, it's just a static pose, but I want to make sure it feels like it's catching a certain motion that,
yeah,
almost feels organic, but not, you know, like, yeah, you know, like these guys aren't doing full action necessarily, even though I guess some of the lore they're doing, like, you know, full barrel rules sometimes, depends on who's writing it.
I tell you, that cartwheeling spider is, you know, that will live on in infamy forever. You know, I haven't read the book, but I've heard it referenced so many times. Blaine was the first one to curse it. But yeah, too funny. Definitely.
But I mean, that stuff's cool too. Like, I mean, you know, DeSabron's animation, it is very fluid. Mm. It's very animated, and that's awesome. I still love that stuff, but for me it's definitely a little bit more toned down from that. I feel like it's more fun when, in my mind, they have limitations and these people are sort of working against those limitations. Mm. But they're still able to find that, those moments of grace and those moments of where they're just like super in tune with that machine. And you can, because for me it's always about the mech warrior, so like even if it's you're seeing the mech, I want you to feel like there's a personality behind that that's driving this machine.
Yeah.
And anytime I can get that to come through, that's a win. So that, it's hard with just a static image when you got like a mech just sort of doing this, but like,
right,
yeah, it's just like I'm always trying to push every twist and turn just to just that what I think is the limit of that thing. And then,
yeah,
you know, balance it to make it feel like it's just about to maybe tip over, except he's shifting its weight just right.
Yeah.
it's fun. I love doing that.
Awesome. It makes me think, I watched this video, probably found it on Facebook or something, that popped up, and it was a guy driving a backhoe, and he basically got the backhoe off of a fairly tall flatbed trailer just using the backhoe, and like he would manipulate it and move it and then angle it and then kind of, you know, write it down and got back on it as well. It was amazing. It was amazing to see this guy, what he was doing with this. It was just a backhoe, you know, and somehow he got it lifted 4 feet off the ground onto this bed without any outside assistance, just by kind of, you know, and it's that, like you said, it's just the master of, you know, of that machine. And
That machine isn't like a crazy organic Gundam or anything, right?
Right. It has no gyro in that backhoe. Yeah. So,
yeah. But he can still make it look like, yeah, this is easy. No problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you see like the fail videos of the guys like in Vietnam, they're like trying to put their backhoe on a boat. And it sinks the boat. And it's like, well, that was a big loss to the budget there.
2 or 3 pounds in the wrong direction. And I think
The first year cadet at the Sun Tzu Mech Warrior Academy, I guess. But
that would actually be fun to draw more inexperienced mech warriors behind the wheel, like just sort of like seeing things a little more off kilter and off balance, and like you don't see a lot of art of like mechs that have just fallen over because they took a wrong turn or something.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, no, I did a remaster of the BattleTech cartoon, and I swear they had more fall damage than anything the clans threw at them. Sure. You know, in that series, I think it was, what is it, Val? I think I went through, and there wasn't an episode that Val was piloting mech that guy didn't fall down. So, so if you want to see experienced mech wars, just watch the BattleTech cartoon.
Oh man, I love that cartoon at this time though. Like just the fact, like being a fan of BattleTech before that even came out, and then seeing it, it's like that Leonardo DiCaprio meme where you're just like, I know that. That's my thing.
Yeah. It was the same with MechWarrior 2 when MechWarrior 2 came out, and it was such a cool perspective to have been a BattleTech fan before that game, because it's interesting because you hear so many people that like they know BattleTech through that game, like because it was so. I mean, basically that was like peak BattleTech, you know, in terms of the public sphere, and how many people, you know, I've told that I was like, yeah, I do this channel on BattleTech. I was like, oh, is that like MechWarrior game? I was like, yeah, that's it. But when you're, you know, immersed in the universe and you get a game that just really hits like that and like brings the lore into, you know, with the, it's fun.
Yeah, just getting a different perspective on it's always cool. I appreciate that.
Definitely. So going back in time a little bit, what was your first official piece? Like what was the transition for you between kind of being a fan artist to actually doing something that contributed and got published?
Let me think. So the first thing I did was for the Mercenary Handbook, I did the Simon's Cutthroat Warhammer.
Okay.
And that was huge for me because Warhammer is always like my favorite mech. So
I got plenty of Warhammers in the background.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, that second edition box was like, I still have it. It's worn down and just like battered to hell. But like, it's because I was always holding it up and trying to redraw it. But yeah, so my first contact with Brent, he was just like, yeah, okay, we'll try you out. And we got this piece. We've got some new designs for the Warhammer. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
And so I finally saw it. Anthony's redesigns, I was just like, all right, these are good. I would like to work with this. There's no 3D in that one. That was all hand drawn based off of just one image that I had. So yeah, the scale's probably a little wonky or whatever, but I put everything I had probably into that piece, which is ridiculous for just a one-off interior that was just like, didn't pay a lot, I'll be honest.
That's how you get started.
But yeah, I was just like, I gotta make this the best damn image I can.
Yeah.
I think it's okay still. I think it kind of holds up, but yeah.
You said, was it Mercenary's Handbook? Is that one it was?
It was Mercenary's Handbook, I believe.
Okay. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah. Maybe I'll send you a link. You can edit it into the space.
Yeah, I'll do a screen overlay. Perfect. The magic of editing.
Yeah. But it was just cool being able to just, you know, that was my first peek at the new redesigns. I had no idea that they were even talking about it. At this point, I was like knee deep in MechWarrior Online. So I was like still like fresh, super into like being excited about BattleTech again. And yeah, just being able to see this design, there's this classic design that I grew up with and work on it. It's just, yeah, it was great. I ended up doing two more pieces for that book, The Ask Scout, and there was a shot of a pack of locusts blasting a cataphract apart.
And I ended up taking another piece.
Yeah, and I ended up taking that cataphract and redesigning that. So that's the new mini. It's based off of that guy as well.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. It's kind of cool that an old piece like that kind of comes back.
Definitely, definitely. Well, Anthony just published his, right, along with yours, where it was the his Mercenary Moon or something like that, where he basically changed his scheme to Wolf's Dragoons from Grey Death Legion. So yeah, and he was talking about that in our podcast about how excited he was to kind of dive back into that and get paid for it,
you know,
to kind of bring that, you know, with some new art and kind of reimagine it. But yeah,
just wanted to pause and shout out, like, you did the bang up job on that redo, by the way.
Huge
fan of that. the original, but the new one's just like,
It's quality. What's kind of looking back, are there any kind of all the classic BattleTech artists or are pieces in particular that are your favorites?
Yeah, I mean, I was always a huge fan of Doug Chaffee's his like cover and interior work. Like, just I always felt like there was a story happening outside of the frame of his picture too. Like, it just felt like there was just so much happening, so much going on. He was able to just get so much texture and atmosphere and everything that, like, even if it was just a lone shot of a mech and one guy standing there looking cool with a rifle, it's just like, I want to know more about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was the best at sort of capturing those. Like, I think the tactical handbook, like being able to kind of see these mechs in the mech bay and just like,
yeah,
just being able to just do that. Like, this entire book was filled with great art. I love the line work in that. Like, yeah, beautiful stuff. But I think probably one of the biggest influences was, I think it's the Black Thorns cover. It's a picture of a Warhawk just blasting PPCs.
Yeah, yeah.
Image is okay. I mean, it's still great. It holds up all right, but it's just one of those ones that I had as a poster, like, above my bed, like the classic teenager.
Yeah.
And, like, it was just one of those things where I was like, it's my goal that I want to make one of those posters. I want to make a poster that somebody hangs over their bed and, like.
Awesome.
I feel like I've kind of hit that mark. I'm like, now where do I go?
So. You did it with the Kickstarter, man. You got, you know, your posters are in the box. You know, we got.
That's a very surreal feeling, man. it's like total imposter syndrome. It feels unearned, but I'm like, I'll take it. It's fine. I'll take it.
Yeah. It's weird. It's weird how that works. And kind of when you achieve those long-term goals about how once you get it, how kind of penultimate, like these penultimate goals, but it's just kind of like this, like, oh, okay, well, I'm still the same person I was yesterday, you know, this thing got published, because I was an athlete, and, you know, whenever I won like a big championship, it's like, oh man, I've been trying to win a national championship for 4 years, and yeah, I won, and I'm the same dude that I was yesterday. It's like, it's such a weird experience to kind of go through, kind of get that big goal and be like, all right, well, what's next? You know, let's go.
There's a moment of sort of like being lost after that, where you're like, I mean, you just have to kind of like reorient yourself and figure out which direction you're heading. And
yeah,
there's always something, thankfully, but yeah, it's a little weird at first.
Definitely. Yeah, well, I love the Timberwolf piece that you have at the armory, the Omni-Mech armory. But there was a wonderful painter from Germany. You know, I had reached out. He had done he had painted one of the new minis in that scheme, and it looked amazing.
Yeah,
and I'm super picky about how my miniatures look. I want it to look like a photo of a real thing. I don't like all the like extra edge highlighting and stuff that makes it look comic booky.
Different loves for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
I love like Machine and Krieger, where everything's just like real pretty, just like chunked up and
yeah. And I had reached out to him to commission. I had never commissioned one before, and he offered to do it for me just as a thank you for the work that we had done with Renegade HPG, or I had done with Renegade HPG. But so yeah, I can't wait. He's got that done. He's been sharing it. It's a N151, if I'm remembering correctly. If not, I'll kind of put it down below. But people can check it on Twitter. But amazing, amazing work. And it's been awesome to kind of chat with him and getting some stuff. And he painted the Galtor campaign archer, you know, from that cover for me. And he's doing Yornaga's Warhammer. So partially that I know you did for what cover was it? It was you had Yorinaga and Morgan Kell's Archer. What cover was that for?
I forget which warrior cover that was, but I had a lot of fun with that one. Just really pushing the overheating effects on it.
Definitely, yeah. The glow, I love it. Yeah, because and actually, this is awesome. Your artwork, when I did do a custom card. Actually, I'll pull it up here. I'll share it with you. But sure. I did a.
I will say I feel a little guilty about those covers because usually when you're doing cover work, you have to make room for like, you know, the top and bottom text. And those ones, I totally whiffed it. I was like, eh, it's fine. There's text goes here. Awesome. So like when you look at the whole image on its own, you're like, eh.
Yeah. Yeah. So these, I have a version that's like the, you know,
oh, nice.
Compatible with the game. And let's see if I can actually get it in focus there. There we go. So people can read it. So if you read the ability in there, it is inspired by your artwork. And so right under the bold.
Nice.
Yeah. So basically he gets the double overheat if Yorinaga is piloting it. And so that was your artwork, man. That was, I was like, oh, he's glowing. He's so high. And then this is a full art version that I made for myself.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah, anytime I show that image anywhere else, I always crop it down to mostly just that with just a little bit of the archery.
Yeah. That was a great
piece. I had a lot of fun with that.
Tons of fun. But those are the details, man. The details that I love, you know, kind of the meth glow when it's so hot.
It's telling a story, right? Like, even just like, so I love industrial design too. So when I did something like that, I'm thinking about the full internals of the mech and like how the armor would heat differently from like the crevices. And I want to make sure like, where it's going to start venting out is where it's going to come out. And like the heavier, thicker parts can still stay kind of cool. And I mean, it all seems like, of course when you see it, but like actually thinking through when you're making it's like, oh man, it's so cool. I'm just geeking out over like where the heat waves are going to come out and shit.
Yeah, definitely. Very cool. Well, we talked about what my favorite book was. What's your favorite story, you know, kind of in the Battletech?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I don't want to say Wolves on Border as well because I feel like it's a cop-out, but it's definitely in the top two or three for me. I actually really loved the first two books of the Grey Death Legion saga. Like,
okay.
It felt like that just, it gave a different perspective of the battlefield, and it felt like that's the first time humans felt like squishy little meat bags up against these metal things where it's like, oh, these can actually be kind of horrific.
Yeah.
I think it was the second book where they're in the, they spend more time in the jungle, and that sort of jungle guerrilla warfare was, it was unique. I hadn't seen anything or I hadn't read anything like that before. So
yeah, I'm just picked up Mercenary Star. I'm a couple chapters in. I'm trying to kind of read through because I was able to make contact with Bill Keith, you know, to try and get a podcast, but I wanted to reread because I was 15 when I read it the first time. So I want to reread. And then I haven't, you know, I've been so crazy and flat out, I haven't read anything for the last like 4 or 5 months.
Sure.
I hope he's not going to be, you know, resentful that I kind of like dropped the ball and following up on the podcast because we were set to go. And I was like, I need to read this first so I can
scratch my brain. I'm sure he'll understand.
I'm about three or four chapters into Mercenary Star now. I read Decision, you know, actually at the beginning of my read through, and then I went straight to Warrior Trilogy because I wanted to dive into, you know, to Mike Stackpole stuff. But it's fun.
My taste definitely jumps. And so it's, probably the Grey Death Legion, at least the first two books. I think the third is pretty solid too, but then, Wolves on the Border, and then it jumps over to Warrior Trilogy because again, it's just like the first one that was my entry point, so it's always nostalgia. And, I mean, Sackpole's writing is just so easy to just digest, and just, it feels good.
I remember my memory's not good enough so that I could actually remember what my first book is, but I do remember how impactful the cover for Way of the Clans was for me. Of the kind of the dire wolf walking past the guy kind of standing on the girder. And just, I remember every time I would go into Walden books, you know, that tells how old we are, right? The Walden books. And I would see that one. I'm like, oh, it's such a cool cover. But it was a good one.
Actually, Walden books played a big part in my Battletech love back in the day. What do they have in stock?
Totally. I'd walk in and be like, even though I had most of the books, I was like, well, what do they have? You know, do they have it?
You know, it's like we didn't have the internet. We weren't able to be like,
totally.
this is the full library. It's like, oh, is this new? Oh, it's yeah. old. But
yeah. Yeah, that too. It's like suddenly a new book would pop up and it's like, all right, gotta get that. But yeah, you never know. It's funny. It's you know, technology is advancing so rapidly, and just how different people's experiences now are versus, okay. you know, I mean, we're almost four. I'm 40. You're getting close. Like, we're not that old. 40 like, yesterday. 40 yesterday. Ah, oh, congratulations. Saturday. But yeah. So it's yeah. Just looking back and just like how different the experiences of kids are yeah. versus where it was like for me, it's going out to play with friends and just like knocking on their door and seeing if they're yeah. home. You know, now it's like, you got to text them. Are they there? You know, the worst that kills me is like when people are like texting, they're like, hey, can I call? Are you free? Right. Like, dude, just fucking call me, man. I'm not free. No. Not free to leave a message. Or then if you call someone and you don't leave a message and they call you back, and I'm like, I didn't leave a message. Like, I just want to talk to you in the moment. Like, yeah. It's like, we were going to get a bite to eat. Now we already ate. So you don't need to call me back. Yeah. It's like, it's so weird. And I like try to frame that to how our parents, how different it was for our parents versus us. Yeah. But I definitely feel like it was way more of a evolution between 20 years ago versus 40 years ago.
I think so too. I mean, I've got two teenagers now too. And just like watching them kind of do this sort of similar things that I was doing, but like, it's such a different world for them. It is all through their phones. Everything's instant.
Yeah.
You know, if they can't get that instant gratification, it's just like, ah, forget it. I'll do it later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we used to have to like really coordinate our plans, and if it fell through, it was a big deal.
Yeah. 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 Totally. Yeah. That was one of the fun things with the cartoon and redoing the cartoon was like, finally kids would watch it. Cause no modern kid is going to watch a snowy resolution, you know, 90s cartoon, you know. And then my favorite comments were the people that like were my kid will finally watch it. Yeah, I can sit down and watch the BattleTech cartoon with them. I was like, oh, hit me right there. Mine's 4 years old, actually. He turns 5 in 2 weeks, yeah, and hopefully we'll get more. Got a late start on that, but that's my parenting advice for the young people, is like, do what Marco did, and you know, have kids in your 20s, like, screw this, start your career.
I did it almost too early, but you know, if you can meet in the middle, perfect.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Do it when you have energy is the key thing. Do it when you have energy. It doesn't matter. It's all going to be hard. It's not going to get easier when you're older, but you'll have less energy to deal with it when you're older. But too funny. Well, we can wrap with Travis's life advice on having kids, but no, this has been a ton of fun, Marco.
Thanks for having me, man. This is great. With
the creators that help us kind of like live and enjoy, and you know, certainly with the artists that help us visualize the universe. And I'm obviously a huge fan of your work. You know, your artwork's on a ton of the custom cards that I'm playing with my girlfriend here at home, and you know, share on Instagram or Twitter every once in a while when I get a cool one to. Unfortunately I can't give the official art ones away. I do, whenever I get an unofficial art on a card, I try to do giveaways with it, but you know, the old copyright, it can't be giving away the official stuff.
Yeah, it gets you every time.
We can show it off and do it at home, but in the meantime, but yeah, so for me, you know, thanks a lot. I really appreciate the work you've done.
Thanks again for having me. Again, I'm just happy to be a part of all this, like coming in as a fan, it's just like dream come true. So
awesome.
This is great.
Very cool. And we talked about your art station where people can find your stuff. I know you have a website too. You know, you want to spit out some places where people can connect with you online and kind of follow your
work. I mean, I'm still actually very bad about putting myself out there for that stuff, because you know, most of my work does come through my day job. So if you want to check out markomazzoni.dunks.com, that's my personal website. It's honestly just as up to date as my art station, which is unfortunately not very, but if you do want to check for current art, I do post stuff up every couple of months, maybe closer to a year sometimes, but I'll try to keep it a little bit more fresh for you guys.
Awesome. And you're on Twitter too. What's your Twitter handle?
I think I'm on Twitter as Mark Cobra, but I don't think I've posted anything. It's mostly so I can like memes, honestly.
Yeah. I've seen you tag there and I was like, oh, Marco's on there. I got to follow him. But cool.
I have a very disappointing social media presence.
No, that's all good. You got a full-time job. Those are for the people that those are for the struggling artists that don't have that full-time gig yet.
But, exactly. Yeah. I use it to like other people's stuff, because you know, I'm a big fan of what other people are doing right now.
Totally. Yeah, and do you do any fan commissions, or is it all kind of official through Catalyst and Hairbrain? Do you have time for that?
No, I mean, I do occasionally. It's definitely one of those things where if the schedule allows it, I like to do some fan art as well. But yeah, I mean, schedule fills up pretty quick because, you know,
yeah,
work, home, personal work. So it's like, you know,
teenagers quick, in the house, so, man, that take their time.
Yeah,
too.
So, but if anyone wants to ping me and, you know, they're okay waiting a little bit, you know, hit me up. It's fine. I'm okay with the, you know, getting some gears going in my head. It might take a little while. It's up. That's cool too. Cool.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks again, Marco, and everybody. You know, you heard here where to contact them. I'll put it in the description too for you guys. So click those links. And yeah, in the meantime, thanks, Marco. And yeah, we'll have to do this again. Maybe we'll get you on for one of those roundtables and we can just
geek
out with the group. Awesome. All right. Take care, Marco. Bye.
All right. See ya.